The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
Welcome back to Dark Side of the Pooch. Busy man sitting to my left. He just sat down, stuck him in the ears, and he's ready to go. Answer your questions. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. Of course, our show is always brought to you by Ed's Pet World down there in beautiful Homewood, 50 years in the industry. I got a chinchilla. One of the coolest. I got to give you a chinchilla update, dude. Still one of the coolest animals. The thing is jumping. You know, it's like every animal. It's like a human being. The more you put into it, the more love you give it, the more love you're going to get out of it. If you've got one of these smaller, you know, you see these people where they got hamsters and gerbils and, you know, they got videos on TikTok and the thing's running all over. They could fall asleep with the thing, you know, tuckled about your, but you know, wish my hamster would do that. Well, it's because you don't spend any time with your hamster, man. You know, my friend has guinea pigs and they sleep in bed with her. Well, it's because you don't sleep in bed with your guinea pigs. You're never going to get to that point. So I said, you know what? I got this chinchilla that I just shelled out $3 bills for. I'm going to get the most out of this chinchilla. So I've been getting it out every single day and it's very domesticated. It's very friendly for about 30 minutes. And I get in a bathtub with it, obviously with no water because they can't get wet. And I sit there and just let it do whatever it wants. And now it's getting to the point where it sits, you know, above my breastplate. It's getting in my hair. It's sitting in, it shits everywhere, but I mean, that's okay. That's what they do. But it's the coolest thing I've ever seen. So if you get a chinchilla, you can get one at Ed's Pet World. Also, Sasquatch toys and comics down there on Citation Lane. Comics from the 50s, 60s, 70s. Unopened toys, buy, sell, or trade. Check it out, Sasquatch toys and comics. First of all, you doing okay? Are you doing right? Hello?
Yeah, man. Right. I'm doing great. Do you feed the chinchilla? Yeah, we got a glitch here. I don't know what it is. Do you feed the chinchilla, like, chewed up food from your mouth? Like, do you, like, chew up little, like...
Now, for right now, chinchillas are different in that they can't have fruit. There's lots of fruits they can't eat. They can have carrots, celery, and their special chinchilla food, but they can't eat hamster food. They can't eat gerbil food. They can't get any special chinchilla formula. The great thing about it, though, Doc, is I'm putting out like a handful of food. He's not even going through it during the day. Just a handful of hay. That's perfect. You put the bath upstairs and that's one scoop. I mean, it takes me literally like 30 seconds to get him ready for the day. Now I need to clean out his cage. The poops are really, really small. They're like a third of the size of rabbit poops. So it's just, you know, it's you get what you pay for, right? And again, it was $300, but it's the best small animal I've ever had. And the damn thing is like about this big already. It's getting to the point now where it's almost the size of a small cat. That's pretty cool. It's one of my favorite small animals I've ever had.
You might be able to train it to like give you a haircut. If it eats hay, you can put it on your head and it might gnaw, like might give you a little bowl cut.
And it was my understanding that they can learn their voice. So his name is Gizmo. So we're calling him Gizmo. Every time we get him out, we have to call him Gizmo. And he is now coming to us. And we've only had him for a couple of weeks. Like, here, Gizmo. And he'll come running up to us. It's the coolest thing. It's awesome. It's great. And then going on there, Rossbridge Animal Hospital, where, of course, you reside, rossbridgevet.com, 208-0301, 208-0301. Getting ready for a busy spring and summer. But anything going on there interesting before we get up into our mutton mail this afternoon?
I amputated a toe today. Oh, I took off.
Do tell.
I took off so it would have been, I guess the equivalent, I guess the pointer.
Yeah.
The pointer sister.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a giant schnauzer, about, almost 120 pounds, big dog.
Whoa.
Don't really see a whole lot of giant schnauzers anymore.
Is a giant schnauzer actually a breed, or is it giant because he's fat? Are they called a giant schnauzer?
Yeah, it's a giant schnauzer. You know, you hear of miniature schnauzers.
Oh, I'm pulling up giant schnauzer right now. I want to see a picture of this thing. I didn't know they existed. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. They're beautiful dogs. I mean, they're just like a miniature, except, you know, full giant size. And when they have a nice haircut, I mean, they're beautiful dogs.
Oh, my gosh. They are beautiful. Wow. I'm looking at a picture of a black schnauzer. That is one big dog.
Huge.
Yeah, it's a little.
And this one.
Go ahead.
Yeah, this one was black. Had a little bit of gray. He's a really good looking dog. But so he had a what I think he's going to end up having is a squamous cell carcinoma of his nail bed, which sounds really bad, but in most cases in these dogs, it does not metastasize. They don't really need any follow-up treatment.
Good.
And it's usually confined to the soft tissue. So like the nail bed or, you know, the skin or connective tissue. It doesn't involve the bone. Mm-hmm. Usually does not involve the bone, but you have to amputate it, or it's just going to be a continued source of irritation and inflammation. Oh. And you have to get pretty wide margins on it. So yep. you can't just like cut away the soft tissue. You have to remove the whole toe. So we did that today, and there was really no other option. You have to take it off. So the dog made it through surgery, and hopefully he'll do fine with the recovery. But cats get squamous cell carcinoma too. With cats, it's a lot bigger of a deal because it usually does metastasize. But for whatever reason, these dogs, these really big dogs, this doesn't happen so much in small dogs, but usually these nail bed tumors, mm-hmm. Usually larger dogs. So this giant schnauzer fits the bill.
I don't want to gross anybody out, but how do you amputate a toe? Is it like a giant pair of shears, or what, how does that go? I'm imagining it's a one cut situation, or does it clean up? How's it go?
All right. So, you know, our hand mm-hmm. is not super unlike a dog's, but if I could give you like an example with my own hand. Yeah. So in a dog's hand, this is the dew claw right mm-hmm. here. All right. Which this dog didn't have. It was gone.
Okay.
Because it was taken off and it was a puppy.
Okay.
So what we're doing is we're removing this digit right here.
Okay.
And if you think about it, dogs have webbing here, you know, that goes basically all the way down in this part right here. Mm-hmm. So they're almost kind of joined. So what you do is you make an incision all the way up to where the joint is. The joint's going to be about right here.
Okay.
All right. On the underside, you make kind of a corresponding incision, cut through here, cut around here, and then you join that incision
okay.
about right there mm-hmm. and you're right over the joint right here. Mm-hmm. So then you just cut through the joint capsule. You're going to have to cut through, some collateral ligaments on each side of the joint.
Yeah.
And then you're going to cut through the extensor tendon that's above the joint. The extensor tendon is what makes the toe do this, extend. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, you're going to cut through the flexor tendon. The flexor tendon is what makes the toe do that.
Oh.
And then once you have that off, the whole thing just comes right off, and then you close it up.
So much for my idea of just going in there with some clippers. Okay, give me the nail yeah. clippers. We got to take a toe off here. So this dog will only have three toes, and the question is, any balance issues? It's probably fine on three, right?
So in the dog, you know, your foot looks like this. These two middle ones are the weight bearing toes, mm-hmm. so they can easily. They can lose this. This is the second digit, or they can lose the fifth digit with very little issues at all. But you can also lose these two. You can lose either one or both, because sometimes they'll have this squamous cell in the webbing right here. Mm-hmm. And you have to take both these digits. And so they will do okay. It's not ideal, but then they end up just kind of looking like a rock and roller all the time.
Oh, that would look cool.
Yeah. You have a rock and roll dog.
So if you had a rock and roll dog, would there be any reason to keep the leg, or would it just walk on those two toes? Or let's say you had no toes, or have you ever had a dog with no toes? Do you just keep the stump? Do you keep the leg, or just a three legged dog that doesn't use it? Or how does that work?
He could keep the stub.
Yeah. Just the stub. Yeah.
You keep the stub, but you can also have the rock and roll dog.
Probably makes some great guacamole.
Have the rock and roll dog. Yeah.
So just saying. Okay. Good rock and roll dog. That's good. Let's get some emails here. info@tonycurryradio.net. Ed's Pet World, our proud sponsor here, of course, of Dark Side of the Pooch. He's Dr. Rab Stewart, 2080301, rossbridgevet.com. Barb wants to know, she's got a Pekingese. She said, then sometimes she'll walk outside when she leaves her. You know, some dogs go out and they come right in. She said, when she knows her Pekingese has been out there for quite some time, it's probably into something it shouldn't be into. So she'll go out there and inevitably it'll usually have stuff hanging from its mouth. Like it looked like it just vomited. And she doesn't know whether she should clean that vomit up and then kennel the dog so it doesn't vomit again in the house, or just stand outside until it looks like the dog's vomiting. How do you know when a dog's done throwing up, and will it not throw up if you put it in a kennel?
How do you know when a dog is done throwing up? Mm-hmm. That's a good question. And you know when a dog is done throwing up when it has stopped throwing up.
Okay. There you go.
So I'll let me give you an example. When just today we had a dog that came in and he decided that he wanted to eat 4 or 5 used tampons.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's good. Okay.
So used the dog chowed. Dog chowed down on those. Mm. And so we made that dog vomit so he wouldn't have to have surgery.
I bet you did. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Made him vomit. So we give them an injection to induce vomiting. And the only way that we know they're done is when they're no longer retching because they don't have anything left in their stomach.
Yeah.
So you really can't stop that train. So what I would say to Barb is just let the dog throw up and then give it a few minutes and it's probably going to be done, but it's going to want to continue to throw up until its stomach is emptied.
Okay. So you take a chance. I mean, if you bring it back upstairs, I guess the question is when we get sick, we throw up, you know, in the morning and then we may throw up again that afternoon and we throw up later on that night because we've got the bug inside of our system. Do animals do that same thing or do they let it all out at one time when they're finished?
They're usually going to let it all out at once.
There you go. All right.
Tim. And I'm moving around on you because my internet, I don't know if it's my internet or what, but
that's fine.
I've been kind of slow, so I'm moving around.
You're good. Tim in Philadelphia wants to know if you can diagnose congestive heart failure just by listening to a dog's heart.
You can get a really good idea that they have congestive heart failure by listening to their heart.
Okay.
And you can use the signalment of the dog to help with that as well. To get a real... there's lots of situations where you can say, all right, this dog has a heart murmur. It's a small breed dog, or even large breed dog for that matter. So yes and no. But sometimes you won't hear a heart murmur and they'll have congestive heart failure. So something like, for example, like boxers and Dobermans, those are larger dogs that are predisposed to dilated cardiomyopathy. And that just means that the heart chambers get really enlarged and the heart muscle gets thin. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times those dogs will not have murmurs. So they have congestive heart failure, but their heart sounds fine.
Yeah.
But when you have these smaller dogs that have mitral valve disease, and the mitral valve is what connects the top part of the heart and the bottom part of the heart on the left side. It separates the atrium and the ventricle. You can hear the blood acting abnormally when they have mitral valve disease. You can hear it with a stethoscope. So to answer his question, yeah, you know, you can get really good suspicion by listening to a dog if it has a heart murmur.
Well, what exactly, when we say the word murmur, are we using the word murmur like murmur, murmur, or is it like murmur? Is murmur actually mean something scientifically?
No, I think it, I think we're using it the right way. I think that I don't really know why we adopt that sound, that name for the sound, because it doesn't sound like a murmur.
Yeah.
It sounds like a swoosh. Like it's a swishing noise. And that is the blood flowing the opposite direction than it should in the heart. It's instead of going from the atria to the ventricle, it's going from the ventricle to the atria. And it's because the valve, it's supposed to sit like this. It's supposed to open and close. But when they have mitral valve disease, it doesn't really close.
Huh.
It does this. So the blood goes back up to the atrium. And that's the swoosh that you hear, is that blood flowing backwards.
A congestive heart swoosh does not sound nearly as good as a congestive heart murmur. If you got a murmur, it's like, ooh, we got a murmur. But if I said you got a swoosh, people are like, what the hell's a swoosh? Can I just take a couple of aspirin and go to bed? Or what's a swoosh? So I can understand why. But I always wondered if murmur was some type of scientific, or is murmur just like, you know. And
about the dog, if you say swoosh, people think you're wearing like a Nike.
But the dog's doing the tampon thing too, man. Just make sure the string's out next time. You just yank the things right out. You don't have to make them vomit or anything, right? You cannot just pull them right now. It's like a
you could pull it out either end,
like a line of sausages. Ted in Birmingham says his dog has a yeast infection but can't afford to come see Dr. Rab. What should I do? Now, I'm not sure what a yeast infection could be on the foot. Could be anywhere, right?
Could be anywhere. If it's on the skin, then you can go to a pharmacy and get some 4% chlorhexidine solution. 4%. It's got to be 4% or greater. And it's like a surgical grade scrub. You know, you use it for surgical sites and it kills bacteria and it will kill yeast, but it has to have a contact time of about 10 minutes. And you got to do that several times a day. Now, if it's a yeast infection in the ear, do not put chlorhexidine in the ear because it's ototoxic. They will lose their hearing. So do not put that in the ear, but if it's on the skin, it's no problem.
Okay. Grant in Huntsville says he breeds both cats and dogs, and over his 20 years of breeding, he's realized that on occasion, sometimes the pups and kittens come back to see the dogs he's actually bred. He gets the dogs bred, he leaves the dogs, and he takes the ones that he's breeding with, and then he gets rid of the other ones. He said the cats never get along with the kittens when the kittens come back, but the dogs always get together with their pups. He said, why do their cats' mamas don't get along with their kittens when they come back to see mama?
I think it's a cat thing. I couldn't answer definitively, but cats are not near as social as dogs are. Cats fight with other cats. It's kind of hard to get cats to commingle.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that probably it's more of a cat thing than more of the mama not liking its babies, and dogs are more social. So they're going to get along pretty well, but cats are kind of antisocial. And I would say that just across the board, it's probably not so much that the mama doesn't want to be with the babies or the former babies. The mama just doesn't want to be with any cat, period.
Yeah. Do you find, I went to the park yesterday with Rainer and Frisco dog. And again, whenever I have them together and they come upon another dog, it's all out. There's going to be a fight. I mean, there's going to be a fight. Now when I just walk Rainer by himself, I can allow him to associate with the other dog and they usually smell each other and they're usually good and they walk away from each other. Whenever I've got Frisco, I don't know if it's a protective thing or not, or an alpha dog thing. I'm not sure. If you do have two animals, and just for safety precautions, I always make sure, because a lot of people are like, yeah, they just let their dog walk right up to your dog. You're like, dude, you gotta put them on a short leash and pull them back, because you don't want to do that. Don't ever, just a little word of advice. If you're walking your animal, don't let your animal near another animal unless you know it's going to be okay, because not all dogs and cats get along. They just don't. And I don't want to be in trouble for my dog taking a chunk out of your dog's neck, because my dog would probably fight to the death. But when you get two dogs together that don't know each other, and right off the bat, I mean, they're getting after it and there's no other animal around. Why are they not getting along? Why sometimes they sniff around each other and they get along and they go, you're cool, I'm cool, and they walk off. And then why sometimes they just want to kill each other the minute they see each other? Do you know?
Well, it's about the demeanor of the dog and it's about the body language of the dog.
Okay.
So the body language is going to be controlled by the demeanor of the dog. But dogs are really, they're really in touch with body language of other dogs and body language of people. So if they are, you know, exploring or meeting a new dog for the first time and they get any indication of some strange body language from the other dog, that's when you start to see some, you know, maybe some aggression or kind of getting tangled up.
And does it matter if both dogs are alpha dogs or if they're both minions? Does it matter if they're both like a secondary dog where they just kind of lay back from each other? I mean, if they're both alpha dogs, more likely going to fight, or does it matter?
Well, when you have two submissive dogs, then you're probably going to be good.
Yeah.
But if you have one submissive dog and you have one aggressive dog, then you're probably going to be okay. As long as the aggressive dog will kind of back off once the submissive dog shows that submissive body language, laying down, rolling on its back, or turning its side or turning its back. But when you have two aggressive dogs, you know, that's when you're going to have issues, because neither one of those dogs are going to back down, most likely.
Yeah. Hey, Dr. Rabb, we're out of time. Fantastic show. I know you're super busy. We love catching up. Tell people how they can find you. And of course, great email questions, info@tonycurryradio.net, brought to you by Sasquatch Comics and Toys, and of course, Ed's Pet World. But tell people how they can find your wonderful services.
You can call us at 208-0301. You can email us, rossbridgeanimalhospital@gmail.com. We're also on Facebook.
You're the man, brother. I appreciate you, and I'll catch up with you next week.
All right, man.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.